Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Monday to all of you. Nice to be with you. Appreciate you getting up with us. Hope you had a great weekend. We are with you till 10 a.m. this morning. This morning and the next two mornings afterwards. We means myself and Brandon Scott. B. Scott in for Pope Zaza, Seth Payne for the next few days.
Dude, what a hell of a week to be in with you, too.
I know.
I mean, we're in the thick of it with the Astros, yeah. And what a series they had over the weekend. We're going to talk plenty about that. But training camp starting this week, and we'll be out there to start it, basically to kick things off. Man, yeah. I cannot wait. I'm so glad to be here, man.
Wednesday, it's good to have you, as always. I love getting to chop it up with you, B. Scott. If you want to get in, text page is 713-572-4610. You can get us on YouTube and Twitch as well. It was a big weekend. Well, let me back up on the Astros here for a second.
I thought it was a hell of a weekend to lose two out of three.
Well, it was... I said going into the weekend, and this is before they lost Isak Paredes. My God, that we'll talk about that.
Goodness.
The medical situation got worse for the Astros this weekend, at least in terms of the number of bodies. Guys that are already on the injured list are progressing in the right direction, but the number of players on the list is going in the wrong direction right now.
Number of players and importance of players in that direction now.
No doubt. You've got your two everyday players that made the All-Star team are now both on the injured list, with Jeremy Peña and Isak Paredes joining him on there with a hamstring injury. It did not look good from the second he pulled it on Saturday. This wasn't one of those ones. This wasn't a Nico Collins hamstring where he scored a 78-yard touchdown, celebrated with his teammates. Didn't look like anything was wrong, and then the next thing you know, he's missing the next 5.5 games.
Give us hamstrings like Nico Collins.
Yeah. Well, And not to throw shade, like Isak is in a different physical state than Nico. Looks like he was built in a lab.
I think that's fair. Not shade. That's Isak, let's just look at the guy.
Isak straddles a line between beer league softball and major league baseball. So he looks more likely to get a hamstring injury, and his hamstring injury looked nasty. Pulled it about halfway down the line. But I want to talk about the weekend overall, and I want to talk about yesterday. I said going into the weekend, knowing this triage situation that we're kind of in right now with the Astros, B. Scott, medically, and knowing that they limped into the break collectively as a team, they were all limping into the break. I went into this weekend, sounds like a loser's mentality, especially going against the Mariners, who can't get out of their own way historically.
Right.
But I would have said, you know what? I would sign up for 1-2 right now just to keep them at 4 games back. You're going to get guys back here. I would just win a game. Just don't get swept. Keep them at least a series worth of games behind you here. And they got beat Friday, resoundingly. The Saturday game was highly entertaining, but they lost that one too.
One of their more entertaining games of the year.
Yeah, if you didn't have a dog in the fight and you just sat down and watched that baseball game, you were entertained by that game. If you're a sit down and watch a baseball game person. Yesterday's game, I think, is the biggest win of the year so far. And they were down 3-0. They were dead. They had a minor league lineup out there on a Sunday. They had a Sunday lineup.
Yeah.
Like they had an ultimate Sunday lineup. They were down 3-0. Hunter Brown's knocked out of the game because his pitch count gets way the hell up there. So that's still a concern to a degree, is Hunter Brown. But then 11 straight runs yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, and some of it was Seattle J.P. Crawford dropping a pop fly.
Yeah.
Later in the game, J-Rod misplaying a Taylor Trammell, probably should have been a tough out. Instead, it was a double.
How about Taylor Trammell?
And Taylor Trammell.
Go get him.
He'll get acknowledged in an hour and 16 minutes, Taylor Trammell will, on Acknowledge Me. But I think that, to me, that so far is the biggest win of the year. Given where they were in that game, just left for dead. Four innings in, they're dead. I was this close to being in channel-changing mode. And then they explode. On by the way, on Wu, they're all-star.
Yes, there we go.
Like, your all-star is scuffling, their all-star is dealing, and then the gods just step in the fifth inning and say, nope, not your day, Mariners.
Yeah, the biggest thing is to do it against Wu. And with it being this lineup, it's got to make you feel good, at least about the prospects of not being at full strength for a while. We don't know how long Isak Paredes is going to be out.
Yeah.
We already understand that Jeremy Peña has been out for a significant amount of time already. Jake Myers, the list kind of goes on and on. But I was different from you going into this series of saying, hey, I'll concede 2 out of 3. I didn't feel that way because they were reeling going into the All-Star break. Because, like, to me, the 1-5 going into the All-Star break made this series even bigger to me. Mm-hmm. Like, it put even more weight on it. It's like, hey, these guys are already on your heels. You were reeling going into the break. Just the math of it. Now, it's not going to kill you, but it would help a lot to win 2 out of 3 as opposed to lose 2 out of 3. Yeah. But that being said, if you're going to lose 2 out of 3, this is the way to do it. Like, to still go out there and play some kind of reputable baseball that you can be proud of. Of course, we talked about Saturday being the type of game. Like, you go 11 innings and you lose on the road, you can accept that. And the fact that the way that the extra inning rules are designed now with the extra man on second base, it's not designed for extra innings to last up until the 11th inning anymore.
No.
That's the whole point of it.
Yeah.
And the fact that that happened and we had that back and forth and it was exciting of a game. I will take losing if you entertain me. But then if you especially back end it with game three, with Sunday's game, and to do it against an all-star pitcher with a, let's just be generous, call it a minor league-esque lineup where Taylor Trammell's out there, the player of the game, I'll take that.
I think, you know, you bring up Saturday. Like, this team's got an incredible ability to turn the page within games. I mean, during that long streak they had where they were the best team in baseball for the month of June, they were winning a lot of games where, I won't say they looked like they were dead like they were yesterday, but, you know, they're big in late innings. They've been great with two outs. For a team that is a little challenged offensively, they are situationally, they've been very, very good since May. But that loss, that was not just like your garden variety extra innings loss on Saturday.
Yeah.
You know, you came back in that game. Again, they looked kind of dead in that game too. And then they score 4 runs in whatever inning it was to take the lead in that game. A lot of it with two outs. You know, Cam Smith grounded into that double play. Looked like it torpedoed the inning.
Yeah.
And then they score 4 runs after that. So the way they lost, though, in extra innings, the ball hitting off the nub of, I forget who the hitter was.
How unique is that?
I've never seen it before.
Right. I mean, how unique is that?
And the heads up of the base runner on third, I think it was Raleigh who was on third, you know, to actually run home, you know, because it looked like he beamed him. So the ball's dead at that point if he did bean him, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so it was
But it also makes sense why the guy even acted like it beamed him, because it did hit the nub of the bat, which is basically the hand.
Kind of shocks you a little bit,
but not
probably.
Quite. Well, yeah, and I'm sure it shocks you, and you can kind of feel the reverb.
Yeah. So the way they lost on Saturday and losing Isak Paredes in that game, I mean, that was a devastating loss.
Yeah.
And to bounce back the way they did on Sunday, I thought was a lot of what this team has been about this year, man. This team is built on guts and a lot of gauze bandages and duct tape.
I don't want to get hyperbolic just 8 minutes into the show, but it did feel like a great value brand 2017 World Series-esque where it feels like they win and lose the game at least twice before the game is over, whether they actually win or lose the game. It feels like, you know, if you're not inclined to go all the way in and watch all 9 innings and you just kind of give up on a simple result in an inning, you're like, oh, that team's going to win. That happened at least 2 or 3 times over the last 2 days.
Yeah, no doubt. And we should point out, too, that it gets lost in the shuffle because the final score is 11-3 and the Astros ran it up on them in the last few innings. But when that was still a game, when it was 5-3, the Astros had taken that lead in the fifth or sixth inning, whatever it was. The play, the double that Taylor Trammell, you know, it looked like Hummel. I don't know if he misplayed it, but he didn't make the catch.
Right.
Trammell is there backing him up.
Yeah.
Throws an absolute dime of a relay.
Trammell's in center. So it happens in left center.
Yeah, in left center.
And Trammell comes and covers
Trammell
the play.
Trammell comes, gets the ball, gets it to Dubon, who's playing shortstop. Dubon throws an absolute seed to home plate. And at first called safe, on replay called out. And if they don't get that replay overturned, if they don't make that play, it's a very, very different baseball game. That got them off the field in that inning.
Yeah.
You know, that ended the inning when they overturned the run at home and they called it an out, Astros were off the field instead of being, you know, 2 outs, 5-4 with a runner in scoring position. Instead it's 5-3 and the inning's over. And it's on to the next inning. That was That was a massive play. And boy, just talk about a game of inches. The runner is sliding. His cleat pops up at the last second over the top of home plate. It was crazy, man.
Yeah, it was. And that play had to be challenged.
Like, it was originally safe.
Yeah, I mean, he's called safe to begin with. And so shout out to replay and all of that. But the thing, so a theme here for me with the Astros is even with all of this calamity around them, they do the little things and the simple things really well.
Yeah.
So, like, they're able to go out there with a minor league-esque roster or a minor league-esque lineup, but because they have good at-bats, they play good defense, they run the bases well.
Yeah.
They're not. Their slugging is still an issue. Even when they're full speed, they don't slug the way that we're used to, the type of Astros that we became used to over time. But they do all of these simple things really well that make them a compelling team and make them a team that is a threat even when they don't have their best guys out there.
Yeah. That was one of those wins yesterday. Like, all right, I'm just going to – if I were on the plane I with the team, I'd be like, all right, we're going to celebrate this one because that's what you do. But this is – there is – boy, there is still a lot to be concerned about with this baseball team. This Isak Paredes injury is huge.
Yeah.
It's a huge injury.
Well, it ended up as fun of a weekend as it was to in all the back and forth that we just talked about. That ended up being the biggest story, at least to me, of the weekend. And you can throw in Lance McCullers and him scuffling and that being kind of a continuing ongoing story. What are you going to get out of Lance McCullers? What's the best place for him? I think that's his own thing. But in terms of like just straight up developments and headlines and news, Isak Paredes being out for however long he's going to be out. I know he came back to Houston yesterday to get that hamstring looked at further. But that ended up being the biggest development for the Astros over the weekend.
Positive development there. I would say still a little bit scary that Hunter Brown has now gone three straight starts and not looked like the version of Hunter Brown that got him on the All-Star team.
Right.
That's a concern. And then I would say the good news, it seems like, going on, knock wood, with the especially the pitchers that are in this rehab stage right now. You know, Spencer Arrighetti, nice outing, Luis Garcia. Although it looks like he's totally changed his throwing motion. Did you see any of the highlights of Luis Garcia?
I did. I don't know what to make of Luis Garcia.
Yeah. If he gets guys out, then great. But
just the time that it's been, and then you come back, you know, you don't see him for 2 years, and then you finally see him, and he looks different.
Yeah.
It's an odd feeling.
Jonathan Singleton's back. That's phenomenal news.
Oh, man.
They're 1-0 with Singy back.
I am waiting on the bat flip single that is for sure awaiting us.
All right, we got Texans training camp coming up this week. B. Scott and I will be out there on Wednesday. We'll be out there 6 a.m., bright and early. We're getting it kicked off for you guys here on Sports Radio 610. Along those lines, we got a lot of new faces. Power ranking the new faces and our excitement level of seeing them in a training camp environment. Text in 713-572-4610. I've got my list right here. We'll go through B. Scott's as well. Ocho is up with us early. Says, Sean, I'm late. You know that you're up early. Routinely when it's 6:19 and your first thing you text is, I'm late.
Yeah, sorry I'm late.
Yeah, that's true though. Ocho's here at 6 a.m. every day. Did you mention the ace of the staff, Mr. Brandon Lee Walter, a.k.a. Great Value Tom Glavine? I'm telling you right now, if the Astros were to be heading into maybe not a wild card series, but maybe if it went 2 out of 3, Brandon Walter is your third best starter right now.
Yes.
He's starting playoff games for you right now. If this is what you look like pitching-wise going into the postseason, he is starting playoff games for you without question, I think.
Yeah, and you could look at it from either side, right? On the one end, that's a little bit concerning given the experience and just the no-name nature of it. But also, if you're like us, like the people that are listening to this show and like you and I who watch every Astros game and watch every Brandon Walter start, you're kind of like, you know what? I am actually okay with that guy based off of what I've seen so far.
Yep.
So I'm a Brandon Walter guy. I'm actually a fan of all of the – let's call them minor league pitchers that they've had kind of come in and fill in the spot for the injured guys between Brandon Walter, Colton Gordon. All of these guys have had their issues, but at the same time, you kind of understand it. I've got far less of a problem with these guys themselves as I do just the situation in and of itself that none of us can control. It just kind of is what it is. Shout out to John Lopez. But, like, just the fact that they're in this position is what I object to more than what they've actually given us. I am a Brandon Walter guy, for sure.
I put Gusto in the same bucket with those. I know he was on the team to come out of camp in the bullpen, but he's had to start a bunch of games this year. You weren't expecting that.
Or has to come out there and relieve Lance, whatever he's scuffling, because now it's his long reliever role. Well, like it's one or the other.
Or even yesterday, it was wild watching the broadcast yesterday towards the end of the game, and Callis and Blum are sitting there talking about, and rightfully so, talking about, like, man, Abreu might have to finish this game. They're up 11-3. They've just got nobody else, and they mentioned that Gusto might be available. He's never pitched 2 days in a row before, so do you worry about what kind of impact that has on his arm? Eventually, obviously, they didn't. They brought him in. But, yeah, like, it sounded weird in an 11-3 game, but they're kind of having to figure some things out because they've been so taxed on the bullpen. And that's where, boy, Lance has got to – I mean, if you're going to throw Lance McCullers out there every 5 or 6 days, he's got to give you more than 2 2/3 innings. He's, a good Lance start can't be 5 innings with 101 pitches.
Right.
I mean, this is even when he's been good. This is kind of, he's never been an economical pitcher.
Yeah.
You know?
And now he's not economical or necessarily effective, which really at some point.
It's a bad combination.
And I don't know if we're at this point now, and maybe we're there, maybe we're just getting there, but at some point we're going to have the conversation of, is this guy hurting you more than he's helping? Because, you know, when he was coming back or in the beginning of the year, it's like, hey, luxury Lance, it's a plus. Then when he gets back, it's, hey, you need this guy. He's your third best guy at this point. And now
and he started pitching that way for a brief spell.
For a brief spell, exactly. Yeah. It kind of teased you a little bit with, and I even said it on the air. I was like, man, it's amazing how Lance McCullers continues to reinvent himself by force, because he has to with all the injuries that he's had. He's had to reinvent himself as a pitcher, and a credit to him for doing that. But now that's not looking so great. So at some point there's going to be a conversation, or it could be a conversation of, what is Lance McCullers? What is the best place or the best use of him, if any at all?
All right. Training camp starts in 2 days. 48 hours from now, you and I will be in segment number 2 of our first training camp edition of the show. I can't wait.
Let's go.
It's been a long few weeks, man, since minicamp. Although it's been nice that during the dead time, the Astros have been, the last week and a half notwithstanding, one of the hottest teams in baseball.
Yep.
And the Rockets did us the service of going out and getting perhaps the greatest scorer of the 25th century, or 21st century. 25 a game is what was in my head.
Yeah.
The number 25 was in my head because he scores more than 25 a game routinely. 21st century Kevin Durant. So that's been nice. And you have executives from companies at Coldplay concerts fondling each other on the Kiss Cam. That's really helped as well.
That will sustain us for, I think, decades to come.
I think it will too.
As long as the internet exists.
That's right. We'll get to them in a minute. But training camp starts up. New faces every year. We've got some high-profile new faces this year, you know, for a team that came into this offseason with not nearly as much cap space as they did last offseason, you know, when they were able to go get Danielle Hunter and trade for Joe Mixon and give him an extension and all those things.
So, and also Stephon Diggs, obviously.
Stephon Diggs, yeah. But this, I would say at least a couple, like, very, very prominent names. So I've got my list here of my excitement level of newcomers here. I've got my power ranking here. Do you want me to go through my power ranking, or do you want to dueling piano this thing, and I'll name one, and then you can pick one that you want to name? We go back and forth here.
So I'll say this on the front end. We have 4 of the same 5 guys.
Oh, good. Okay.
And the only order where we're consistent is the 5th guy.
Okay.
So that's it. So I've taken a peek at your list.
Okay.
My list is similar, 4 of the same 5 guys, but I've got a different guy in there, and we have the same 5th guy.
I'll start at the bottom of my list then. All right, let's number do that. 5. I got Christian Kirk as my 5.
I'm with that.
This time a year ago, the Texans were getting power ranked. Their wide receiver room was one of the top 3 or 4 in the league, every outlet you went to, because of the Diggs trade. And obviously because Tank Dell and Nico Collins did some great things back in 2023. By the end of the year, it was Nico Collins and a bunch of dudes who couldn't get open.
Yeah.
Christian Kirk gets open. Christian Kirk, you know, it obviously there's no tank. At healthy Tank Dell, I don't know that there's a player as unicorn-like as he is, and the ability to do so many things at such a diminutive size. But Christian Kirk definitely scratches you where you itch in terms of having a guy who's a pro, who's accomplished. When he's been fully healthy, he's been a 1,000-yard receiver for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Christian Kirk, how he fits in this offense, in the slot, in this new offense, this Nick Caley offense, number 5 for me.
Christian Kirk gets open. Christian Kirk gets open consistently. And Christian Kirk, I think this is most important, specific to the Texans. Christian Kirk gets open quickly.
Yeah.
You know, and that's within mind, for me at least, that the offensive line is still a work in progress. We do not, it might actually be great. We don't know. But at this point, I don't think any of us can go into the season, especially going into training camp, and say, hey, we got all the confidence in the world in this offensive line. You'd be lying. So if you're coming from it from that perspective, all of the guys that can get open quickly, the Christian Kirks of the world, the running backs that are going to catch the ball out of the backfield, the tight ends, I think all of those guys are going to be super important.
All right, give me one. Give me one off your list.
So off my list, and I'm going to quickly go away from somebody that's not on your list because I was surprised. I didn't realize, and I'm just going to kind of spoil this a little bit, I didn't realize that we could put rookies on here when I saw that you did.
Yeah.
I picked a different one.
Okay.
Jalen Noll.
Yeah. I have Higgins in mind, but I went back and forth.
So Jalen Noll.
The case for Noll. Go ahead.
The case for Noll is a similar case for Christian Kirk, I think, when we talk about guys that can get open quickly. But I think with Noll, it's going to be even more so because it's not like it's just like he's just going to be a slot guy. I think they're going to use him in multiple ways. We'll see him in multiple different spots. And the biggest thing with him with the Texans is how much this offense to me lacks speed. Like that's been one key element of the, they just didn't have a burner. Tank Dell is a very specific kind of player and he'd be the closest thing to that. And Nico Collins for his size obviously moves extremely well. But they didn't just have a straight-up speedster, that type of guy that is a mismatch because of his speed. And so Jalen Noll is going to be certainly somebody for me to watch, even in training camp, watching him go up against this star-studded DB group that the Texans had.
I have Higgins on my list. I'll do Higgins here just since you just did Noll. The reason I picked Higgins over Noll was strictly based on some of the things that I saw at minicamp and at OTAs with Jaden Higgins. Noll was hurt for minicamp. He didn't get out there. Higgins was making plays downfield against first teamers in minicamp. You know, yeah. That and including just he had, I mean, the one hand, everybody's seen it on social media, but the one handed catch he had with Kamari Lassiter draped all over him.
Yeah.
And big body, like the intrigue for me of having a guy that's practically the same size as Nico Collins on the other side outside, having two big physical receivers like that, very intriguing to me.
Yeah, and he's on my list just for the record too. He's on my list as well.
He?
Yeah,
okay.
I think you're going to get to the guy that's not on my list, and Noll takes his place. But I think anytime you can get a guy with the combination of skills that Jaden Higgins has, kind of similar to Nico, that size but moves that well and has already shown a propensity to making the type of plays that we've already seen him make. Yep. I can't wait to watch him.
Is Cam Robinson the one that's not on your list?
That's the one that's
Cam
not on
Robinson,
my list.
And I get that. It's the offensive line. It's not super sexy. It's not like you're you sent out a Pro Bowl left tackle. You didn't bring one in.
Yeah.
But that's what makes it intriguing for me. You know, the fact that I think all these positions are open to competition, including left tackle. Cam Robinson doesn't have a good training camp. He won't be the left tackle for this football team. Somebody else will. But he's replacing Laremy Tunsil. And it's a counterintuitive move to trade away your best pass protector when you have an offensive line that had a quarterback get sacked the second most times in the NFL, got hit a ton, pressured like crazy. I'm for the Laremy Tunsil trade, just to be very clear. I think it made sense. But Cam Robinson is – you're going to need good left tackle play.
Yeah.
And he's been – okay as a pro. He's not been Laremy Tunsil.
Yeah. I think the tackle position, I wouldn't single out Cam Robinson. I think every point that you make is valid. I would just look at the tackle position at large as one that is fascinating to me because we went into the offseason. Of course, you remember this, Sean. We go into the offseason having questions about the offensive line from guard to guard. It was an interior offensive line question mostly. I found it interesting how we get to OTAs and minicamp, and it feels like they're – If they're settled on anything, and I'm not saying that they are because we don't know this to be true for a fact, but if they're settled on anything, it feels like they're more so settled on the remade interior offensive line than they are the tackle position. You mentioned Cam Robinson specifically, but I feel like both tackles, if we can even say for sure that Blake Fisher is the right tackle, it feels like he is, but it doesn't feel like either guy, whether you're talking about Blake Fisher on the right side or Cam Robinson on the left side, for sure has that tackle position locked down. Like it could be another guy by the end of camp.
These guys haven't put on pads yet. Okay, we got to take a step back. They haven't put on pads yet. So I think everything's up for grabs. The main reason I have Cam Robinson on the first team right now is, one, he was with the first team a lot with in minicamp. Like, he was the guy there. He's also making $14 million a year.
Right.
You know, Trent Brown is making $3 million a year, and nobody's mentioning his name at all in this whole thing. And I think
Except John Lopez.
Well, and he also hasn't practiced much either. He's coming back from injury. Yeah. So anyways, yeah, I like that. Cam Robinson, and by proxy, the offensive line as a whole, is for sure going to be something that we're keeping an eye on at camp. All right, so we're down to the last two. We have the same two names then. If I'm doing process of elimination, I'll let you go first on the two names that we are most excited to see at training camp.
Let's just get to CJ Gardner-Johnson now.
He's my number one, just to be clear.
He's your number one. So you and I have a flip-flop number one. The other guy who's on your list will be my number one. Yeah. But CJ Gardner-Johnson he's number one on your list and could easily be number one on mine. I think just the entertainment value alone, the character that he is going to make for a fun training camp. Getting to watch him out there interact with his new teammates, getting to interact with him for the first few times that we do. But then also, hell of a football player.
Yeah.
So, like, when you add these, if you're just one or the other, it's whatever. But when you're both, when you're a character and you're going to be a key component to the football team, I can't wait to see that.
Nick Chubb, total opposite reason.
Yeah.
Like He is you know, stoic and quiet. You know, he leads by example, that kind of thing. With Nick Chubb, the intrigue is just how healthy is he? You know, once you put pads on, how explosive does he look? You go back and watch Nick Chubb's highlight package from before this last knee injury that he's had. Of course, we all know he suffered a really damaging knee injury in college as well. But Nick Chubb is in the conversation for best running back in football over that period of time. Never averaged under 5 yards per carry. The interesting thing about C.J. Gardner for me, and I'll get your thoughts on Chubb in a second here, but just to dovetail off of what you're talking about, if you watch that interview he did on the Pivot podcast, and a lot of it was about why didn't it work out in Philly? Why are you on so many different teams?
Yeah.
And more often than not, the answer has something to do with something he did at practice. So, you know, I shot the gap, and they got mad at me for doing that in practice. Dan Campbell told me to stop being so physical. I was like, what the hell? We do Oklahoma drills. He's openly bragging about how he basically shut down joint practices a couple of times because of hits. So what are we coming up on here? What are we talking about? Practice.
Yeah.
That's what makes him an intriguing training camp name for me, is that it seems like a lot of the issues he's had in previous stops have to do with the fact that he maybe takes practices up a couple of notches past where the head coach would like him to take it.
You are too intense in practice for Dan Campbell.
Right.
And D'Amico Ryan says, bring him over here. That's exactly my type of guy.
That's why
exactly
he's number one
my type of player. No, yeah. I'm right there with you in terms of the logic and the reasoning for wanting to watch C.J. Gardner-Johnson. If he is that much of a disruptor in practice, or even somebody that is as intense as Dan Campbell is saying, hey, reel it in a little bit,
yeah,
that's going to be a lot of fun. Now, I don't want him taking the heads off of anybody on this offense.
No.
Because this offense has a lot of questions and has a lot to prove, especially with a new offensive coordinator, CJ going into year three, and all of that. So please take it easy on these guys, but also be entertaining, and I'm sure that he will.
Be entertaining. All right, your thoughts on Chubb. I didn't get a bite at the Chubb apple.
So you asked the question that all of us are going to be asking, how explosive is he?
Yeah.
My question, which is kind of dovetails off of that, is what if he is?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, so the reason why Nick Chubb is the top newcomer to watch for me is the what if factor. And I think we're allowed to traffic in what ifs at this time of the year when you're going into training camp, because we don't know. So it's fair to ask the question. We want to know how explosive he is. Okay, if the answer to that question is, let's just throw a number out there arbitrarily, 60%, 75%. Okay, mm-hmm. What if he is? What if it's there? Now what does that look like? What does that mean for the Texans running back room? What is that added element to the offense? Aside from it being a different offense or a new offense, what is that added element of having a second guy at that position that you can rely on, which is something that the Texans have not had nearly as often enough as we had liked to have seen him have it over the last few years?
He's healthy. That becomes a really fun room, you know, to speculate. I mean, there will be somebody who has played some football on this team quite a bit over the last few years, gone.
Yeah, you made the point back when they made the signing that just the numbers game alone makes it a fascinating, makes it an intriguing piece of training camp to go in and then what happens after that.
Yeah, yeah. It's Damian Pierce, because Woody Marks is making this team.
Yes.
You know, so barring injury, again, barring knock wood, barring injury, it's going to be a numbers game between Damian Pierce, Dario Gumbawale. You do rationalize a Gumbawale. We need him on special teams. Yeah. We just view him as a body, not as a running back, that kind of thing.
Woody Marks making the team both because he was just drafted, and also he's a different type of back.
He's a pass catcher.
Has an added element to the offense that is different from the rest of the guys. So you actually want him, aside from the fact that you just got him and haven't really seen him play.
Yep. All right, let's get to some headlines. We'll circle back to the Astros. They win yesterday. They lose the series, win a game, keep the Mariners at bay. The Texans made a signing over the weekend. We've got some NFL news to get to as well. We'll get to all of that coming up next in headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
All right, let's get to headlines. Astros win yesterday 11-3. Take one out of three from the Mariners over the weekend. I said going into the weekend, sounds like a loser mentality, but if they win one, I'll be okay with it. Seattle stays four games back instead of two. There were only four outcomes this weekend. You were either going to be two games up, four games up, six games up, yep, or eight games up, depending on how the series went. And I will say this, had I not said that before the weekend, I sure as hell would have been bargaining for it at about the third or fourth inning yesterday. Like, please just give me this one game.
Yeah. Or even Saturday when Isak Paredes goes out.
Yeah, I mean, give me one of these next two.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, at that point, you're really kind of playing with fire in terms of what your lineup looks like.
I don't know how it's going to look over these next few weeks. You know, they play Arizona these next few games. Schedule eases up. I know they got the A's on the other side of that. I'd have to pull it up to see what they've got after that. Their schedule is, through the rest of the season, one of the easier schedules in baseball.
Second easiest schedule in baseball post All-Star break.
Yeah, post All-Star break. So, you know, and that said, though, you got a couple series with the Red Sox who are playing well all of a sudden. The Yankees are on there. Detroit's on there again. So, and you're playing with a lineup that sort of, it doesn't matter the strength of schedule some nights because you've got two-thirds of your guys out there probably shouldn't even be in the big leagues right now.
Yeah, and the timing of what they did yesterday, it helps that, you know, we were having a conversation earlier in the show about Lance McCullers and then, of course, Hunter Brown not necessarily looking like, you know, peak Hunter Brown at the moment, that you were able to, with your less-than-ideal lineup, go out there and perform the way you did against an all-star caliber pitcher like Brian Wu.
Yeah.
I think was a big, big deal for this team.
That was big, man. That it was Wu out there, and Hunter Brown's out of the game. He's your all-star. He's scuffled. He's done. You're right. Losing. And Wu was dealing the first four innings. He looked great, and then all of a sudden, boy, it was that Cam Smith double that got things going.
Right.
And then it was just, the dam opened up for the Astros yesterday. There was even some home runs. Taylor Trammell and Christian Walker hitting some bombs. So that was good to see. We'll talk more Astros later in the show. They're four games up in the AL West as we wake up this morning. Texans sign Arriante Ursary, their second-round pick, to a four-year deal. So the maneuver that GM Nick Caserio made in giving Jaden Higgins a fully guaranteed contract at the 34th overall pick that had gummed up the works for all the other GMs after the Higgins pick, including Nick Caserio.
Yes.
Seems to have been resolved league-wide. There's been this flood of second-round picks now signing. Tyler Shuck, I think, is getting a fully guaranteed deal, the quarterback.
I believe so.
I think the fully guaranteed deals are drifting into the early 40s now. I don't know what Ursary's overall deal was, $9 million and change.
That's all I saw was
I didn't see the guarantee percentage. Don't really care now that it's signed. But I just think, this whole Nick guaranteeing Jaden Higgins thing and the ruckus that it caused for like a week in the offseason has been fun.
Yeah, and we know why it's all sort of coming to a head now. It's time for training camp. It's time for these guys to actually get paid. It's time for them to actually earn their keep out there. And so it's not a surprise that all of this stuff is finally coming together, but it is pretty cool that Nick Caserio was the one to sort of set the precedent, not just league-wide, but even for himself. I don't really care, kind of to your point, I don't really care what the guarantee is, but I am intrigued just to know it because it is Nick Caserio who sort of set this domino effect in motion, if you will.
Chiefs extend George Karlaftis, their defensive end, 4 years, $93 million, $62 million guaranteed. So about $23, $24 million, which is about, that's Karlaftis is a very productive, not quite Pro Bowl level, important, I think the key thing, important piece for Steve Spagnuolo's defense.
Yeah, look good against the Texans in the playoffs.
That's what I was wondering. Like, how many millions did Dalton Schultz get this guy?
Oh, man. And by proxy, Bobby Slowick. Bobby Slowick, who insisted on guys like Dalton Schultz and Kate Stover, even as a rookie, going up against guys who were, if not Pro Bowl caliber, pretty close to Pro Bowl caliber type of defensive lineman. Like Jonathan Grenard earlier in the year. And then, of course, George Karloftis in the playoff game.
There's a pawn shop owner in New York City who's pleading guilty to, they call fencing, some of Joe Burrow's product that was stolen from his house. We saw that. If you watched this series, Quarterback on Netflix, the episode, that was a cliffhanger on one of the episodes.
Yeah.
Joe Burrow getting the notification on his phone in the locker room after a win over the Cowboys that his house had just gotten robbed.
Yeah. I remember this story, too, though. Briefly, a story, because he was on Hard Knocks, or the AFC North was on Hard Knocks, is where I feel
mentioned. Yeah, that's right. I didn't watch any of that.
I think that's where the first mention of the Batmobile.
Yeah, he kept from buying. He was going to buy an authentic Batmobile,
right?
But then after this theft at his house, he said, "I'm not doing it."
So the buying of that was revealed on the first Hard Knocks that was done on the AFC North.
The in season Hard Knocks.
Yeah. That's how people knew about it. Yeah. But then, of course, in season, I believe, is when this robbery or this burglary happens.
After the win over the Cowboys.
So it's kind of interesting to see all of that come together. But it obviously makes sense that it would end up at a pawn shop. Of course, the first thing that you're going to go do with Joe Burrow's stuff is go hock it.
$300,000 worth of stuff they took out of his house.
Goodness, man.
And if you recall, this is part of a very calculated, targeted group of thieves that targeted high-profile athletes who were away playing games.
Yeah, yeah.
Luka was in there. The two guys from the Chiefs, Mahomes and Kelsey, were in there. It's another NBA player whose name escapes me right now. I know Luka was in there, though.
It reminds me of, and I feel like Netflix or somebody did this documentary, too, of the burglars that kept going to Paris Hilton's house.
I haven't seen that.
Oh, man, they got Paris Hilton's house, like, no less than two or three times. And they were of the area or something of that effect. And so they, not just Paris Hilton's house, but they were burglarizing multiple celebrities' houses over time.
Okay, here's my question. It sounds like you've seen this. Have you seen this documentary?
Yes.
Okay. Did Paris Hilton do anything about it after the first burglary? Like, were these chess moves going on back and forth? Or did Paris Hilton... It would seem on brand that Paris Hilton just forgets to do something about it a couple of times.
They just
keep going back to the well.
As far as like what she did in terms of law enforcement, I can't remember, but I do know one of the big reasons of why they were able to burglarize her house.
Okay.
Is because she left the door open.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's right. Trying not to be mean.
I don't know. I don't know if she forgot to go to the police. I can't remember that, but she definitely forgot to lock her door at least the first time.
Okay. Those are your headlines. I hesitate to get to any headline involving Trump. I hesitate to get to, but it was a big story yesterday that Trump might block the new stadium in Washington, D.C. if the Commanders don't change their name back to the Redskins.
I don't want to like dive into the political waters of this.
Yeah.
But I do want to highlight how trolling has been mainstreamed by our political leaders, because there's no reason for this. This is uncalled. I don't care where you stand politically. If you love Trump, if you don't, I don't care. There is no, this is uncalled for, but it is absolute trolling on his part.
Oh, yeah.
And sort of kind of feed, you know, fanning the flames and sort of feeding the fire a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. He seems to like wake up in the morning and be like, I bet I can make a headline today.
Yes.
I bet you can't. I bet I can. I bet I can make a sports headline today.
Yeah. And you know who the people who really like me are the ones who hate that we don't call them Redskins no more.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say that.
That's it. Oh, that's really happening over in our nation's capital. All right. Those are your headlines for today. All right. Breakout. Brandon and I are going to be out at Texans training camp on Wednesday. Wednesday morning, practice begins. Players and rookies report tomorrow. Practice begins on Wednesday. Breakout players around the NFL. Do the Texans have anybody that hits the radar this year on breakout players in the NFL, or have they done breakout already? We will talk about that coming up next.